insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Another day of impeachment hearings. Today has been unique, to say the least. We're going to walk you through what at least unfolded earlier today. Ambassador Sondland has been testifying, and I think this has been, if not the most anticipated, the testimony that has kind of scrambled this thing up again, you know, raising questions. Who knew what? When did they know it? Remember all those old terms, you know, what did he know and when did he know it and that type of thing. And oh, my goodness, it honestly is a who's on first. And we will try to at least walk you through some of the highlights of that testimony coming up in just a few moments. We're hoping to be able to talk with our 3rd District Congressman. We've reached out to John Curtis. The Medal of Honor Monument is being proposed for Washington, D.C., and exactly what would that mean? As I read through the information on this, it seems like something that ought to be done, and maybe something, too, that is overdue. And Utah women, I had the opportunity to talk with Susan Madsen a week or so ago on the Sunday morning TV show that I do, Sunday Edition on Channel 5, and we talked about some of these statistics surrounding the number of women that are on corporate boards and on nonprofit boards and on committees and commissions, and especially when it came to things that are government-oriented. And in many cases, overall, certainly, women are woefully underrepresented. There was an interesting article out today talking about the fact that 50% of the women in the state of Utah seem to believe, and whether this is something deep DNA, whatever, don't misinterpret this. This is just meant the way that they are treated, the way that they are paid, and so on, that they are in a lower status than men. And as today I'm surrounded by all female producers, and I said, that's absolutely right. And of course, there was the, and I said, no, I don't mean that it's in the DNA. I don't mean it's even a gender thing, other than the fact that we are in this evolution out of that disparity. I've been reading a book, and I told our producers this today. It's called Code Girls, and it's about the women who helped crack some of the most difficult codes in the history of humankind back during World War II. And as a matter of fact, they even take you back in that book to the time period of World War I. And some of the sexist things, it was a discovery, like, oh my goodness, women can actually do this? And I'm going to tell you one story just really quickly. There was, and it wasn't just in code breaking, it was everywhere. We all are familiar with Rosie the Riveter and everything else, and women were being recruited into everything you can practically imagine except active combat. And there was and the author is merciful and does not actually name the company. So I don't know which company it was, but as this company was recruiting women for their jobs, whatever they were, it didn't really clarify what that was either. But the electric company clearly said and just wrote back, yes, you know, we want you to find us women who can come into this position, but make sure they are beautiful, because after the war, we don't want them on our hands. Holy cow! For anybody who believes we have not made at least some progress, I refer you to that quote. I mean, oh my goodness. So what is the status of women today and women's attitudes about their status? We're going to talk about that with Susan Madsen. I've enjoyed our conversations with Susan over now quite a long time, and the last one was on television. We're also going to talk about, and this is something that comes up this time of year, when everything is so festive and merry and gay is the old term that was used, and we're gathering as families, we're going to fun things, and then all of a sudden, maybe you aren't feeling that happy about the holidays. It's a time where a lot of people deal with depression. And with as concerned as we are about suicide in general in our society, and certainly here in the state of Utah, we're going to talk with Clark Flatt, who is the president of the Jason Foundation, and ways that perhaps we all can help deal with things, help people who are perhaps having a difficult time during the holiday season. Opioid prescriptions. Boy, there is a real focus nationally and certainly here in the state of Utah to limit the prescriptions, limit the number of pills or whatever it might be in that prescription, and then encouraging people certainly not to keep them around. So we'll talk with Lauren Radcliffe, who is an opioid prevention specialist within the Department of Health. That's all coming up, and more. We'll keep a close eye on the impeachment hearings. We noted just a few moments ago, as we were just going on the air, as Maria was delivering the news, that our Congressman Chris Stewart had his 5 minutes on the House Intelligence Committee, and we'll try to replay that in its entirety for you. Plus, he had an interesting moment last night, too, where he referred to what was happening as, I think, and we'll get the sound on this, it really caught my attention, and honestly, I kind of went, really? The impeachapalooza? Yeah, we'll talk about all that. But before, I have to earn my right to continue on. At least for today.
Is the implication that I would continue the show if you don't make it through the news quiz?
Well, now that's an interesting thing. Is am I being? I sense a female coup.
No. Utah does not want me on for 2 hours.
Oh, listen to this.
2.5 hours.
Okay.
Here we go. I had a quick story because we don't have a lot of time. My mother-in-law was a teacher in Willard, Utah, back in the 20s.
Okay.
When she got married. Not my mother-in-law, I'm sorry. My father-in-law's mother, so who is that? My grandmother-in-law. When she got married, they made her quit.
That's it.
Because they said, you now have a husband. We need to give this job to someone who's supporting a family.
Or you need to be home taking care of your family, too. That's brought up in Code Girls because they went to the finest universities, but they also really loved it when teachers would apply. First of all, they could pay them more, so automatically, you know, things improved for the woman, although it was difficult back in Washington, D.C. with housing and everything. But they brought that up, that many women, boy, you know, the minute they got married, it was done. It was over.
Yeah.
You take care of your husband, take care of your family, and thanks, but don't let the door hit you.
Systemically, it wasn't
under the doors or whatever, under the table.
All right, top headline today, this is the top story on KSL.com right now. A recent study from Utah State University is saying technology is hurting relationships, raising depression and anxiety rates. Smartphones, you know, we all stare at them. Do you limit your smartphone time, Doug?
I have to. And you know, first of all, I don't enjoy it. I know a lot of people that's, you know, they were raised with it. I am a migrant into this world. I'm a migrant into the digital world, and it doesn't come as naturally, and it hasn't always been part of my life. But for the generations for which digital is the commonplace, they speak the language fluently, they are absolutely reliant, and I'm becoming more so. But I think it's very, very difficult. I find that if I do spend a lot of time, I find myself in la-la land. I find myself dealing with insipid things. Stupid things upset me that normally I wouldn't have ever thought about or seen. And I'm not saying, you know, hear no evil, see no evil, and speak no evil, you know, cover your eyes, ears, everything else. But there are some things that are just too dumb to even get engaged with.
And somehow we just grab onto. I have ADD, diagnosed ADD.
You mentioned that, yeah.
This is the worst possible thing in the world for someone like me. Because I'll go to check the time sometimes, and I lose 10 minutes.
Oh, I know.
I go to see, and then I'm on an email and da-da-da-da-da.
Are you ready for my stupid confession?
Go ahead.
Okay, every morning I like to get up and just kind of see what the headlines are and what is happening, and I check, you know, a few things. And so I always just, you know, the Google page comes up, and then I get sucked into one of those stupid, insipid, little weird deals like, are you aware of, you know, fill in the blank or whatever, or somebody. And I find myself, like you, 10 minutes later going, all I wanted to see was a stock quote. All I wanted to do was just check the headlines on KSL.com, which I should just do easier. This is on my iPad. I should just do it on my phone. But like you, I get sidetracked and I go, well, there's 10 minutes. I'll never get back.
So I've started something and now we're getting into my life. I got an actual alarm clock on my dresser now. So when I wake up in the morning, I need to check the time, but I don't grab my phone. I actually try to get up and go for a run if I can before I even look at my phone, because I'm the same way. I'll get sucked into it. And a way to start your day is not, getting sucked into these. Anyway, so yeah, Utah State just had a study to come out that said it's hurting relationships and causing depression and anxiety because we just, you said, we get anxious and agitated. And
well, and plus that, you're always comparing yourself. You go, oh man, they went on that vacation. This is if you're on Facebook and Instagram and everything else. And plus, some things drive me nuts too because, you know, I think I'm quite progressive just by being able to use one or two social media tools. I know people that are using five and six. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, comparing, constantly posting. I could go on and on.
I have to be careful on this stuff because I start sounding like, get off of my lawn.
Yeah, but I'm 36 and I'm with you on all of these. I think people are posting, like I have friends on Instagram stories, they upload 30 videos a day. Now I'm walking to the school to pick up my kid. I'm like, I love you, but I just don't care.
I heard Sondland say something this morning that was interesting. They were talking about some of the texts that were going back and forth, and one of the inquisitors said, and then you indicated to him in the text that he should give you a call. And Sondland said, much to, I believe, his credit, he goes, you know, after a period of time when you're going back and forth and back and forth, you need to talk in person. Now, this is not a direct quote, but the spirit of it. You know, sometimes it's starting to get complicated. Just talk in person.
5-minute phone call or 30-second phone call.
I know. You go back and forth on 8 million texts, and it's driving me nuts anyway. My thumbs are cramping up. Where just a few seconds sometimes, even 30 seconds, 40 seconds on the fin could take care of it.
I'm with you.
Get off of my lawn.
Okay, we don't have time, but I'm going to let you pick up two other headlines.
Go ahead.
Do we want to? Okay, all right, fine. Amazon wants to ship you anything in 30 minutes. It's calling in the robots. So same-day shipping, but instead of actual delivery people, it'll be, we had them in the Bay Area, these little, they look like coolers on wheels. Have you seen these?
No.
They drive around the remote control, but you can, now they're going to be able to control them from a center somewhere. And you can order, you know, toilet plunger in the morning. It'll come at 5 o'clock that night via robot to your front door.
Robot.
Are you? But they're losing money on it. So there's this whole economic implication of, do we need things the day of?
How does that work? Get off of my lawn.
You don't want the robot on your front lawn. It will have a full drone fleet. You'll be able to order anything and get it in under 30 minutes if you live near a hub that services its drones. They're calling them drones, but they're on wheels that I've seen. Although they are looking to do drop.
And since it looks like a cooler, I could order Diet Coke.
You could order what? Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Appropriately so.
Now we're talking.
Okay, last one. All hands on deck for Thanksgiving travel at Salt Lake Airport. They're expecting record travel numbers of people traveling. Are you traveling anywhere on Thanksgiving? Are you going to go to the airport?
No.
Good.
No.
Stay away.
Yeah, we have nobody coming in and nobody going out, although we have. But we traditionally do more of the travel around Christmas. Either folks coming from Missouri, we're going back there, whatever. And when our kids were working back in Washington, we'd have a lot of flights in around Christmas especially. But Thanksgiving, not so much.
Yeah, Lisa Riley Roche wrote an article today. It's on KSL.com. So it's the busiest time to travel, big crowds. They're bracing for big crowds at the airport next week. And just if you are traveling, take your time and make sure you give yourself a lot of time at the security gates. We're not going anywhere either. I won't. I don't go airports.
Yeah. Knock back a few Diet Cokes, take a chill pill.
Right.
Right.
All right. That's it. We're
done.
Did
I pass?
You passed.
So I can continue on?
Yeah, you can. I'll turn off my mic.
Bloviate even more? Get off of my lawn. All right. We'll take a break and we will come right back. And we're going to weigh in on the impeachment proceedings. We'll play a few highlights in case you haven't been riveted to this and glued to every single word. We'll share at least some of the highlights coming up here at KSL News Radio. Good to have you along on the program today. And it's interesting. I keep trying to draw back to some of my recollection and experiences when President Clinton was being impeached. And remember, the impeachment is merely the process. The conviction is what kicks you out of office. So we are in the impeachment process. He hasn't, the president has not actually been impeached yet, but is likely to be impeached when the House votes here before, you know, who knows how long. That doesn't mean that he will be out of office. It means then that it goes over to the Senate, and then the case is made, and the Senate, by two-thirds majority, will determine whether or not Donald J. Trump will continue on as President of the United States. So what happened this morning? This is a rather controversial character. He's been labeled as one of the, or at least steering the Three Amigos. And, you know, there have been all kinds of weird descriptors that have been out here. But what did the ambassador to the EU, the European Union, and as he indicated in testimony today, in his portfolio was Ukraine. So what did he actually have to say, for example, about the quid pro quo?
I know that members of this committee frequently frame these complicated issues in the form of a simple question. Was there a quid pro quo? As I testified previously, with regard to the requested White House call and the White House meeting, the answer is yes.
I wonder what Lindsey Graham thought when he heard that. And, of course, we've known that that was probable, that he would most likely say something like that. Because remember when somebody, I think they caught him on a doorstep somewhere, and somebody said, well, you know, what did you think of, is it quid pro quo? And he goes, if I can ever hear from somebody where it isn't secondhand, and somebody who was actually there, somebody who was actually involved, somebody who actually heard the phone call, you know, tells me that there was quid pro quo, I would have to take that very seriously. Well, you know, that's way down the pipeline now, because a lot of people have indicated that, yes, depending on what your definition is and how big a deal this is, yes, there was quid pro quo. And then it was interesting that Ambassador Sondland blamed basically everyone but himself for the pressure campaign on the Ukrainian government.
Everyone was in the loop. It was no secret. Everyone was informed via email on July 19th, days before the presidential call.
And when he said everyone, in his ongoing testimony, you know, he talked about the people closest to the president, and it was his impression that the president, this was coming from the president, in other words. And then also, there has been a lot of conversation. This particularly came from Ambassador Taylor. You might remember that from earlier in the week on Tuesday, when the ambassador said that there were two channels of diplomacy going on, the regular and the irregular channel, and even some have implied that the Three Amigos, Mayor Giuliani and others, that this was kind of a rogue group. So what did Sondland say about that?
The suggestion that we were engaged in some irregular or rogue diplomacy is absolutely false. I have now identified certain State Department emails and messages that provide contemporaneous support for my view. These emails show that the leadership of the State Department, the National Security Council, and the White House were all informed about the Ukraine efforts.
And what were the Ukraine efforts? That is kind of the thing that everybody is looking at, talking about. And it was interesting, too, because if there's one person, and he has refused to testify, if I remember correctly, he ignored the subpoena, and it was Rudy Giuliani. And many of us are old enough, we can recall when he was the hero of America. He truly was. He was labeled as America's mayor. The way he handled the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks on New York City was amazing. I can't even conjure up the word. It was just amazing. And ever since, you know, Rudy's become a little unique, and I'm not quite sure. And boy, Sondland actually talked a little bit about Rudy Giuliani.
Mr. Giuliani demanded that Ukraine make a public statement announcing the investigations of the 2016 election DNC server and Burisma. Mr. Giuliani was expressing the desires of the President of the United States, and we knew these investigations were important to the President.
So what did Mr. Sondland say about what he came to believe regarding the holding of the Ukrainian aid? Let's listen to it in his own voice.
In the absence of any credible explanation for the suspension of aid, I later came to believe that the resumption of security aid would not occur until there was a public statement from Ukraine committing to the investigations of the 2016 elections and Burisma, as Mr. Giuliani had demanded. I shared concerns of the potential quid pro quo regarding the security aid with Senator Ron Johnson. And I also shared my concerns with the Ukrainians.
Interesting comments there, and quid pro quo comes up quite a bit. And remember what a big deal that was, you know, a month or so ago. And people say, boy, if anybody could corroborate or really say who had some firsthand knowledge. And it's interesting that when we're talking about the European Union ambassador and through his responsibilities, Ukraine was in, his words, my portfolio. All of a sudden, this starts hitting a little close to home. And then Mr. Sondland talked about at all times, again, he's trying to make sure that his skirts are kept clean here. He was acting in good faith.
Finally, at all times, I was acting in good faith. I was acting in good faith. As a presidential appointee, I followed the directions of the president. We worked with Mr. Giuliani because the president directed us to do so. We had no desire to set any conditions. We had no desire to set any conditions on the Ukrainians. Indeed, my own personal view, which I shared repeatedly with others, was that the White House and security assistance should have proceeded without preconditions of any kind.
The president earlier today on the White House lawn had some comments and attempted to distance himself from the ambassador. By the way, this is a guy that donated $1 million to his inauguration. We'll play that after we come back from our news here at the top of the hour. We've got a lot to get into on the program today. We're going to be all over the place. Thank you for joining us. Anytime you have a thought or want to pass something along, all you have to do is go to the Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line at 57500.
More afternoon news and in-depth coverage with Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Sometimes the impeachment hearings are tedious. Sometimes it's shocking. Sometimes it is boring, and you'll hear Congressman Stewart talk about that here in a second. But, you know, there's something about it sometimes when I'm watching it. It becomes so frustrating because, as I've mentioned before, sometimes I really wonder who among, because you can absolutely spot, you can spot the assigned pit bulls. You can, first of all, both sides, you know, they have the chair and the ranking member. And right now the ranking member, that means minority leader in the committee, is Nunes. And then you look at Adam Schiff, who is the chairman. And then you've got the designated attorneys who try to have a degree of decorum. And then you have the designated pit bulls from both parties. And then you have most of the representatives, and all of these are members of the House, recall, who are maybe just trying to hammer down a point. Maybe they're just trying to play to the folks back home. But rarely, although it happens occasionally, someone will ask something that you actually believe they are really trying to find something out. And they really are, maybe, at least to a little degree, they have a degree of an open mind. But most of the time, honestly, when I watch these proceedings, I just get frustrated. The beating of the drum. And did you see it yesterday afternoon? Yesterday afternoon, depending on which side of the aisle you are on, because there is no bipartisanship here at all, let's not be mistaken there. There is no bipartisanship at all on the committee, period. So they're going through, and it's the end of a long, long day, which, by the way, and maybe I can play that here, that Congressman Stewart alluded to when his time came along. And some of the insulting things that went back and forth between the ranking member and the chairman were, I suppose, a little bizarrely entertaining. But Congressman Stewart just kind of had to underscore just what a long day and how boring everything had been.
Thank you, gentlemen. Welcome to Impeachapalooza 2019, which is the Democratic plan to compel America to impeach President Donald J. Trump through the sheer force of boredom. Because it's been a long day. And it turns out impeachment is very boring if you don't have any compelling or any condemning evidence.
As things went back and forth, though, you could tell that everybody had their talking points, and those that were on the Democratic side were reinforcing everything that was damning. And they would ask the same questions. Did this happen? Did this happen? Did this happen? Did this happen? And, of course, it made everything look in the negative. Then the Republicans would come back. Did you ever hear anybody say bribery? No. Did you ever hear anybody say no? Did you ever hear anybody? No. Did you ever? And, oh, my goodness. It was just, it was amazing. It was like, you know, when bad movies are acknowledged, they get the Raspberry Award. Good movies get the Academy Award, the People's Choice, you know, things like that. But in movies, there ought to be the Raspberry Awards for these guys. There really should. Just the people that have really kind of out-buffooned themselves. And I'm talking about both sides. And, oh, my goodness. But every now and then, it does get interesting. Every now and then, you do hear something that is a bit compelling. Every now and then, yesterday afternoon, I thought the morning certainly went against the president in the afternoon. I thought some of that was drawn back. I still think it ended up being a pretty negative day. But there were some interesting things that were brought up in the afternoon. But at that point, you know, it's kind of like, I wonder who was still paying attention in any way, shape, or form. I'd love to hear from you on where you stand right now. And, you know, Congressman Stewart put it? The impeachapalooza that is designed to impeach a president just out of sheer boredom. Okay, we'll play in just a second. We'll actually play the congressman's time that he had a little earlier today, just as we were going on the air. And I'm not here meaning to pick on Chris Stewart, as I've mentioned before, and I mean this sincerely. I consider Chris a friend. I really do. Sometimes I'm a little amazed at some things, but he's the only one from Utah that is on the committee, and he's the only one right now that's talking about this. So obviously we're playing his comments a little more than the others, to say the least. But I did want to share President Trump's comments that happened a little earlier today. Reporters caught him on the White House lawn, and the president tried to distance himself from his ambassador, who donated $1 million to his inauguration.
I say to the ambassador in response, I want nothing. I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo. Tell Zelensky, President Zelensky, to do the right thing. So here's my answer. I want nothing. I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo. Tell Zelensky to do the right thing. Then he says, this is the final word from the President of the United States. I want nothing.
The president also said, I don't know him very well. I have not spoken to him much. This is not a man I know well. He seems like a nice guy, though. Okay. All right, let's share what our congressman from the 2nd Congressional District said just about a little over a half hour ago. And we'll just play this mostly in its entirety so you can hear what he might not be your direct representative, but all of our federal delegation, all six of them, two senators, four congressmen, in a very real way, our senators particularly, of course, represent us all. And even though Chris's responsibility is to the 2nd District, he represents all of us here in Utah.
The American people expect a lot of things out of politics. Arguments, protests, we certainly see that. Clash of principles and ideas. I think sometimes eventually they actually would like to see some compromise. But I think something they expect above everything else, fundamental, they expect that there is a sense of fairness about it. And I want to read part of a text I received from someone that I have tremendous respect for. Just a few hours ago, she wrote, crafting a story to hurt another human being can never be right. The means of destroying and hurting another individual just does not justify the end, and politics does not give anyone free pass to destroy other people. Now, you can say a lot about the treatment of President Trump over the last 3 years, but I think one thing you cannot argue is that it has been fair. There were those calling for his impeachment literally before he was inaugurated. For 2.5 years, we were told every single day he has betrayed our country. He is a Russian asset. He has committed treason. accusations that we know now are not true and for which we never have any evidence to support that. He was accused of obstruction. And now here we are actually impeaching the president over, well, first, quid pro quo, until we found out that didn't poll very well with focus groups. And then it was bribery, until virtually every witness before us who was asked a question said they had no evidence of bribery. And now it's extortion. And again, the American people expect some sense of fairness. So when Nancy Pelosi goes before she has seen a shred of evidence, and she announces the president has betrayed his oath of office, he has betrayed the American people, he betrayed national security, without seeing any evidence, again, the American people say, well, what is fair about that? So the question before us now is, again, extortion. That's the latest version of the charges against the president. I'm not an attorney. Extortion sounds pretty scary. It's kind of serious. I had to look it up, what it means. It means obtaining money or property by threat to a victim's property or loved ones. Mr. Ambassador, I'm going to read you a couple quotes from President Zelensky and then ask you a question. First, from a Ukrainian press release, Donald Trump is convinced that the new Ukrainian government will be able to quickly improve the image of Ukraine, complete investigation of corruption, which inhibited the interaction with Ukraine and the USA. Does that sound like President Zelensky is being bribed or extorted in that comment?
As I testified previously, I'm not a lawyer either, and I don't want to characterize any legal terms.
That's fine. I think most people would read that and say, that doesn't sound like he's under severe pressure. He makes it very clear in his own words then. Ukrainian President Zelensky told reporters during a joint press conference with Donald Trump that he was not pressured by the U.S. president. Again, I was not pressured. He used another time. There was no blackmail. I would ask you, do you think he felt like he was being extorted by the president based on these comments?
I really think that's for the committee and the Congress to...
Well, you know what, Mr. Ambassador, it's really for the American people.
I agree.
And the American people aren't stupid. And the American people can hear that, and they can say, I don't think he was under duress. I don't think he was being extorted. I don't think there was an exchange of a bribe. And I would conclude with this last observation. It is common for our national policy to withhold aid for various reasons. You know that's true as an ambassador. Is that not true?
That's true.
It's frequent, isn't it, that we will withhold aid for various reasons?
That's correct.
It is a policy. I mean, for example, President Bush did it. He suspended military aid to 35 countries over their lack of support for the International Criminal Court. I'll bet that helped his political standing back home. But I don't remember anyone suggesting we should impeach him for it. President Trump did it last year with Afghanistan over corruption. We did it with Pakistan over much the same thing. And no one suggested that we impeach them for it. This is a common occurrence in international relations. It is hardly an impeachable offense.
Interesting comments from our 2nd District Congressman. And before we take a brief break... And this is the first time I've heard it, because it was coming on just as we were coming on the air. And, you know, it's interesting that Chris would use the example of President Bush withholding military aid when people weren't, you know, coming on the international court and so on. When President Trump withheld some aid at another time, nobody said a word. Nobody said a word about it. That's because they weren't doing it for personal gain. Or personal issues, or asking for an investigation into somebody who could be a potential political adversary. There is a fundamental difference there. Of course we withhold aid. Of course sometimes it's a carrot and a stick thing. But if the president is doing it for his own personal benefit, whether it be monetarily, whether it be for political purposes, that changes the ball game. All right. We need to take a brief break. When we come back, I'll share some of the texts that are coming in. If you have a voicemail you'd like to leave us, feel welcome to at 801-575-7668. And, of course, our text message line is 57500. And what in the world is going on with Prince Andrew over in the United Kingdom? That's coming up, too. Well, it's interesting to read some of the texts, and I'm going to share them coming up. But there was something, too, that our 2nd District Congressman said, and I'm not here to pick on Chris. He's just the guy that's there. I mean, if it had been another committee, another time, another place, it could have been. Remember, Chris Cannon years ago was one of the, they call them managers, that go over to the Senate from the House when they are making the case for impeachment against a president. In that case, of course, it was President Clinton at that time. So Chris just happens to be in the trenches. So I don't mean to pick on him, but he's the one making the comments right now. But when he was talking about from day one of President Trump, there have been voices calling for his impeachment. And that's true. That's true. But as Rob Bishop has pointed out, in his now rather long tenure in the House of Representatives, every single president he has served under, there have been cries for their impeachment, whether it was George W. Bush, whether it was Barack Obama, whether it was, and let's talk about some of the interesting accusations and the cries for impeachment that have come out against a very recent president, and it was from Republicans and from a very notable Republican, although we weren't quite sure if he was a Republican at the time or not. And the accusation, first and foremost, he cannot be and needs to be removed from office because he was not born in the United States of America. He was born in Kenya. Who was leading that? Donald J. Trump. What were some of the other? He is not really a Christian. He is a closet Muslim. Do you remember that? Where was that coming from? Republicans. What were some of the other interesting things? Oh, they wanted him impeached on his immigration policy. They wanted him impeached on, the Benghazi attack. He wanted, the Republicans wanted President Obama impeached on transgender bathroom directives. And the list goes on and on. But to sit here now in this case and this time, and it's simply the shoe on the other foot. I've seen it. I've been around long enough. I have seen it. Where imagine right now, and let's try to be fair for just a moment. What if all of a sudden, and by the way, one of our texters, and I appreciated his cleverness here. Thank you. Doug, I see a serious tint of Kool-Aid staining your upper lip. Well, before you think that I'm sucking down the cherry or lime Kool-Aid too much, the jury's out for me on whether or not there has been an impeachable offense. As I've mentioned over and over, there isn't a day that goes by that I'm not appalled by our president. There isn't a day that goes by that I am not it's breathtaking how juvenile name-calling, the responses, the ridiculousness. There isn't a day that goes by that I just don't shake my head and go, oh my goodness, this is the President of the United States of America. This is my president. This is the leader of the free world. And we would chastise any one of our employees. We would chastise any one of our children if they did any of the name-calling ridiculous things that this president does on a daily basis. But I'm still, the jury's out for me, has an impeachable offense. Things that have raised, I mean, everybody has said, oh yeah, raised our eyebrows. Yeah, I was concerned. Yeah, I was afraid that this was quid pro quo. Yeah, I was concerned. Republicans, Democrats, everything else. But has there been an impeachable offense? And again, before I'm accused of sucking up too much Kool-Aid, I have not made up my mind yet. But this idea that, oh my goodness, this poor president has been under attack from day one. Well, what about his predecessor under attack from day one? What about his predecessor under attack from day one? What if we were to say, okay, President Obama, we think, was demanding that somebody get the dirt on Mitt Romney and John McCain for the upcoming, you know, potential of running against them in 2008 or in 2000. Well, it have to be 2012 to be president of the United States. What if somebody was talking about some of these issues? What? Imagine. Oh, there would be Republican roastings going on. There would be tar buckets boiling if these very same things were being said, but instead of saying President Trump, you said President Obama. Republicans would just be going crazy. And in fairness, the Democrats would be just stonewalling. They would be all over the place. They would be going crazy to prove the opposite. We would see exactly what we are seeing now with the shoe being on the other foot. It's really quite breathtaking when you think about it. This person said, let's see, let's read a couple of the messages. This person just said, amen, thank you. For Chris to compare Trump with Bush is horrific. To our knowledge, Bush did not withhold aid for his own benefit. Boy, that was a key thing that our 2nd District Congressman did not bring up. President Trump, this texter said, apparently did, or is accused of doing that. Why can't Chris see that distinction? He's not being sincere, honest, or using thoughtful reasoning. Hi, Doug. I would have to agree with you about President Trump. He sounded just like my 4-year-old when she was caught stealing cookies in the kitchen. There was no cookies. Who cares? Said this texter. And then this person said, so Americans can be corrupt in foreign countries and they can't be touched by the U.S., especially when part of the aid is linked to corruption? Oh, no, no, no. If somebody is being corrupt, an American is being corrupt in a foreign country, absolutely they can, should, and hopefully will be held to account. But as person after person, ambassador after ambassador, State Department member, everything else said, there are channels through which to do this. And you don't do it with the appearance of it looking like you're feathering your political nest. All right. There's more to come. All right. In the old days, I keep saying this, in the old days, I would have been playing the meditation music. We may have to find the meditation music. It's Ravi Shankar, you know, and just good meditation music. I can sit up here on our engineering department's brand new counter, and I can be in my lotus position, you know, contemplating my rather unique circumstances and chanting, and I will find my Zen. All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Why, thank you for those who are contributing text messages at 57500. That's our Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line. And those who are also leaving some voice messages, and we're going to share those coming up in a few minutes. I've really been looking forward to this conversation, and I've been imposing on Susan Matson quite a bit lately. We had a very interesting conversation on TV a couple of weeks ago regarding women in the state of Utah on committees, on commissions, on boards, and so on. And then we saw an interesting story today about 50% of women in the state of Utah feel that their status is below that of men. And I thought, who better to talk to then my friend Susan Madsen, who is joining us on the line. The headline actually says more than half of Utah women think they have a lower status than men in the state. Susan, welcome. Thank you again for joining us.
Well, thanks so much. I always enjoy talking to you, Doug.
I got a lot of great feedback on our TV show when we were talking about the number of women on boards and so on. And interestingly enough, and this kind of dovetails into this, a lot of the boards where women are outrepresented, maybe. I don't know how to word that properly, but it seems to be kind of in the more traditional things, family-oriented things, home-oriented things. And you and I talked about the need to really make progress in traditional boards of directors, traditional committees, and traditional commissions.
Yes, absolutely. And when you talk about the status, so the results actually surprised me somewhat, but didn't in other ways. But the good thing about over 50% of women actually saying they thought we had lower status is that they're becoming more aware But there's quite a lot of women that said that they are not lower in status. And interesting, as you know, I've done research and my team has done research for 10 years to compare the status. We use that word on every report, and we've had so many reports on the status of women. And it really matters, I think, in terms of, a lot of the reports are women in leadership. So I'm putting in quote marks the status of women,
right,
on boards and commissions, in politics, on corporate boards. You know, there's so many elements that we measure of the status of women. And as you know, for the most part, we are below the national level on all of these different kinds of areas.
Right. I was going to ask about wages. Is that a real driving factor in perhaps the roughly half of Utah women thinking their status is lower because they are not comparably paid?
Absolutely. And one of the things, you noticed that was the highest, biggest challenge for women that they acknowledged in the study was the low wages. So that issue right there has got more press than anything in the state of Utah. And so a lot of people know that and a lot of people talk about it. And so one of the things that concerns me still, though, is in the media at times or in conversations at times, there's still some folks that say, is it a myth or is it not a myth? And it is so clear from every bit of research that's out there nationally that it's not a myth. It is reality. So when we in language start changing that conversation in Utah to say, you know, what is the wage gap, not is it a myth, then I'll know we're making way more progress. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mentioned to our listeners earlier that I love history and I love to read, and I'm reading a book right now called Code Girls, and it's about the women who during World War II particularly, but also World War I and at other times, helped break some of the toughest codes known to mankind. And it was amazing how many times that not only were women excelling in there, but they were leading. And of course, it was an opportunity that had not been open before, but some of the sexist comments that were made and some of the demands from employers, this was a real shift to all of a sudden now, because so many men were serving in the trenches and out on ships and so on, that now for the first time maybe in very important positions they were employing women. Some of the sexist demands. It was just shocking.
Can I just tell you, though, that between today and yesterday, I've had three women tell me stories that are still people would be shocked.
Yep.
Just today.
That's right.
And yesterday.
It's right.
About being in actual groups within their companies and having the conversations come up that absolutely say, well, he needs to be paid more because he has a stay-at-home wife. I mean, those are illegal, actually, but those kinds of conversations still occur.
Yep.
So some of them, I think, are conscious. There's a lot of unconscious things that happen. And if you're not aware, if you're not even paying attention, there's bias and discrimination, you know, all over the place. I think we are making some progress, though.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I love being a woman and I love living in Utah. I think it's a wonderful place. I continue to say we just need to tweak and improve some things. And one of the areas is in our equality between men and women.
Somebody very wise, not all that long ago when I was in a meeting, and it was about employment and interviews and things like that. And they said, before you ask a question of anybody, but particularly a woman, ask if you would ask that same question of a man. If you would, fine. If you wouldn't, you're in trouble. And isn't that true? Can you imagine in this day and age if somebody said, hey, Doug, are you planning on having a family? You know, are you indeed going to have kids? Can you imagine that? But years ago, that was a common question that employers would ask potential employees. Well, you know, hey, I want to keep you around for a while. Are you planning on getting pregnant? Can you imagine that today?
Well, actually,
it happens. Yeah.
Talked to so many people, and I just spoke last week in an event where many, many men were there, and they were being really open. They'd ask questions before the event so that I could arrange what we were going to talk about, and some of them were about men and women's working relationships,
yeah.
And they were pretty blunt in saying I get nervous to hire women that are a certain age because I know they'll probably get married and have children. And so, you know, they didn't say this out loud. It was just,
right.
You know, anonymous. But those things are still on the mind. And if they're not at least recognized in your thinking, then you make unconscious and conscious decisions about them. So it's really easy to do that. And I still, you know, we have made some progress, but I would still argue we still have a long ways to go.
Well, I'll tell you, I look at my industry, and I've been in it a long time, so it's not like this is revolutionary in the last couple of weeks. But, I can remember back in the day, the only opportunities on television, on screen, was to be either the consumer reporter, and a very dear friend of mine who went on to be a major anchor back in Chicago was the consumer reporter, and a very dear, that was Carrie Cochran, and a very dear friend of mine, Shelley Thomas, was the weather girl, and that's all that was available. If you wanted to be on the air, that was it. Yep. And both of those women became highly respected anchors, pioneers in the industry. I think going back even farther than that, Jackie Noakes, whom, you know, I just love Jackie, yeah. And I think of the pioneering trail, and now, right now, our station manager for radio and television, Tanya Vea, and I look at, you know, so many of the people in our business who are in our executive producer and assistant program director, female. Our newsroom is replete with female. It is terrific, and the changes in my business have been great, but we still need to make progress.
We do, and my argument, I just spoke at a couple of events yesterday, is that it's not just having women take over everything and or men just do all of this. The benefits, the research is very clear that when you have men and women working together, that's when you get the best innovation. That's when you get the most creativity. That's when you get the best problem solving. I mean, the research is very clear on that.
Yep.
So I was just saying yesterday at some speech that we don't, I don't lift women to bring men down. We lift women to lift families, to lift society, to lift men as well. So I think that approach, sometimes people think we do this research and talk about these issues to try and take men out or something. But the reality is that the more that we lift women and men, that will lift families and society. And equality is important.
I mean,
justice and fairness is important for our society. Did you notice the little note that there was at least a beginning recognition of domestic violence and sexual assault issues? Did you see that one?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That is one that I'll tell you that we really do have some issues in the state of Utah with both of those. And at least some women started recognizing that, but we are above the national average in terms of both of those in the state of Utah.
Isn't that sad? Because, you know, we are such a great state. And as you mentioned, you love living here. I love living here. But there are some dark underbellies where we, on negative things, outperform the national norm. And it's distressing. And, you know, you were mentioning the benefits of having men and women work together. And what I've noticed, I think, in my business, and I've been in broadcasting since I was 16 years old.
Wow.
Having women so much more engaged, rather than just being at the front desk or the weather girl or whatever it might be, some of those derogatory terms even now make us uncomfortable, but it brings balance. It really does. Balance in perspective, balance in reporting, balance in our presentation. And I think that is absolutely essential, and I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just having the different perspectives and the quote business case around that also has some application to race and other kinds of diversity as well. But men and women, this is going to be shocking to you, but men and women, we think differently, not in all ways, but we think differently. Is that shocking for you?
No, and that's a good thing. That's what makes life so interesting. And like I mentioned, if you're only getting the male perspective or only the female perspective, there isn't a balance there. And there's so much good happening. Now, Susan, thank you so much for always taking my call, and we appreciate what you are doing, what you're doing down there at Utah Valley University. And undoubtedly, your phone will be ringing again from old Doug up here at KSL.
I I like it. So thanks for calling up today.
Thank you so much. Susan Mattson with us here at KSL News Radio. All right, when we come back, we're going to delve into the what's happening in the United Kingdom for a moment and what's happening here in America with the talk of impeachment. Man, tons of new messages have come in, and we've got some voicemails we want to share. So stay with us. Much more to come. We were just reading some of the texts, and I've been made aware of even some more voicemails that have come in. If you'd like to leave a voicemail on any of the topics, doesn't have to be about impeachment, 801-575-7668, and our Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line is 57500. I wanted to mention this just really quickly. If you have individual health care through healthcare.gov, you can tune in Thursday at 5:30 as Lloyd Coleman from Clarity Insurance will be live in studio making sense of your health insurance. Visit clarityinsurance.com. Isn't that amazing how complex that can be nowadays? All right, but before we delve into some of the texts, we may do that right at the very end of the program. There's a big brouhaha over in Great Britain right now, the United Kingdom, and it's interesting that this is happening right now. Dee and I, we have really enjoyed the Masterpiece Theater, the Crown, and they now have gone into the middle-aged Queen with a different star, who also starred recently as Queen Anne in a major motion picture. But they've been talking about some of the challenges that Queen Elizabeth has had, and some have even almost pulled the trigger on a coup with Lord Mountbatten and so on. And so I've kind of been focused on this a little bit with Dee. And then all of a sudden today, we find out that Prince Andrew is stepping back from his royal duties. Listen to what is being said on the BBC.
In a statement, Prince Andrew said, "It's become clear to me over the last few days that the circumstances relating to my former association with Jeffrey Epstein has become a major disruption to my family's work. And the valuable work going on in the many organisations and charities that I am proud to support. Therefore, I have asked Her Majesty if I may step back from public duties for the foreseeable future, and she has given her permission. I continue to unequivocally regret my ill-judged association with Jeffrey Epstein. His suicide has left many unanswered questions, particularly for his victims, and I deeply sympathise with everyone who has been affected and wants some form of closure. I can only hope," he says, "that in time they will be able to rebuild their lives. Of course, I am willing to help any appropriate law enforcement agency with their investigations if required."
Boy, this Jeffrey Epstein thing is, first of all, it is one of the darkest, murkiest things. Creepy. That you can imagine. His death, suicide, was so bizarre. The relationships, and when he was busted years ago, and the fact that somehow this guy was able to skate. And then we realize the ties that he had with notable individuals around the world, including in this case, Prince Andrew. And it's the links with this convicted sex offender that has become such a major disruption. And Prince Andrew, the story goes that the Duke himself asked the Queen if he could step back from his public duties, and she did give her permission. You wonder where all this will go. And when terms like foreseeable future are mentioned, you wonder how long this will go on, and you can't help but wonder what else are we going to find out here. So, I don't know. That's the breaking news out of the UK today. Prince Andrew stepping back from his royal duties. We'll keep an eye on that for you. And, of course, as the program continues today, we're going to keep an eye on so many other issues. Let me give you a quick heads up on things that will be happening in the 2 o'clock hour. We'll be talking with the president of the Jason Foundation about the issue of, and sadly, this is an issue during this most festive time of year, regardless of your religious background. There just seems to be something that occurs beginning late November and it goes into very early January, where we just kind of show people our humanity. And we gather together. And some people, this is a time of loss for them. This is a time of heartache for them. And it's a time of depression for many. And so we'll talk about that and what hopefully we all can do. And especially as we're all so concerned about the upticks, or at least the reporting of, you know, suicides in our country. And also opioid prescriptions. Very, very interesting efforts are underway. We're going to talk with Lauren Radcliffe, opioid prevention specialist with the Utah State Department of Health. So all of that and more, and we'll wrap up some of the impeachment hearings. The afternoon sessions will be getting underway before too long. There will be some new people who will be asked questions and will give their opening statements. So we'll try to keep you abreast of it all here at KSL News Radio.
Insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Okay, we're keeping an eye on the impeachment hearings, and nothing is up yet. Pentagon official Laura Cooper has arrived to testify, and State Department official David Hale. I haven't seen David Hale yet, but nothing is being called to order, and we'll keep you up to date on that. And boy, really, thank you for your texts, and thank you for your voicemails. And we will, before the end of this hour, the end of the program, we will share many of them, if not all of them, with you. Clark Flatt joins us right now, president of the Jason Foundation. And the issue that we want to talk about as we now very seriously approach the holiday season, for many of us, it just represents joy and happiness and everything else. But boy, you know, even for the joy and the happiness folks, there are times where you go, oh, man, am I going to make it through this? And then there are those for whom the holiday season just is a real, real tough time. So thank you so much for joining us, Clark. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Doug. I appreciate you having us on and being able to share with you and your listeners.
Do you have any particular reason why this is in why this is in your purview today, why you are focusing on this?
Well, of course, the Jason Foundation, we're a youth and young adult suicide awareness and prevention program. We operate in all 50 states. We have an office in right outside of Salt Lake City. And during the holidays is a time that we're very interested in talking in these positive things like you reached out about, things about the holiday season, how stressful it can be. That's a very important for those people who might have already be stressed out a little bit, having some issues possibly with depression or at risk with depression. These types of holidays, as great and as joyous they can be, they can sometimes make you feel overwhelmed and stressed. We're concerned about the risk of depression. Depression, no matter what age group you're in, is one of the leading causes of suicide attempts and suicides in the nation today. So we really want to go out in a positive way and talk about people how to sort of minimize that risk for depression or that stressfulness, especially during the holiday season.
What would you recommend to folks, and especially the younger people directly, and those of us who perhaps have younger people in our lives, in our homes, that we are responsible for? How do we kind of get them through the holiday season without some of the pitfalls you have described?
Right. Well, not to put too many expectations on them, and not even get to our age, Doug. I was wanting to do this, and they gave me my list of things. And then they gave me the wrong number to call you. So that was stressful. That was a stressful situation when I was, you know, that added to that. But I think to help make those expectations of what we expect from our young people, the number of times they go to different parties and things, and then even for the young people or anybody that's listening, and I'm really preaching to myself here too. Learn to say no. I think that's one of the greatest things we can do, not only during the holiday season, which is very important, but all the times. Learn to tell people that, no, I'm too tired. I don't need to do that. I don't need to accept that. I don't need to go to that party. Learn to say no. Take care of yourself. That is one that, again, preaching to myself. of making sure during this time that I stay away from some of the sugary and high-fat foods that are staples during the holiday season, and try to enjoy those foods, but have it in a controlled situation. First and the last thing I would really say to anybody: get help when you need it. You know, the holidays is definitely not a time, as we say in some of our releases, not to go it alone. You know, talk to your friends, rely upon family, share with close friends or family. If you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're starting, I don't care if you're 14 years old or you're 94 years old, if you're feeling overwhelmed, talk to someone, let them know how you're feeling, and don't be afraid to reach out to get help. You know, there's times we all need help, and that's sometimes the most courageous thing to do, is to ask for help.
I remember years ago having a conversation with someone, and this was interesting advice, because when I think of the holiday season, I think of traditions. And often we just get rapturous about this great tradition and how it needs to be continued. But as I've gotten older and our kids now, I've got my first grandchild and both of my surviving children are married. And, oh, my goodness, you know, trying to coordinate. And if you demand that those traditions be upheld and that everybody show up at X time because it's a tradition, these traditions can become anchors on your relationship and your spirits.
Oh, yeah, it's like the vacation film with Tim Chase. We're going to have fun. I've cleaned that up a little bit, but we're going to have fun, and we're going to have it today. You know, that type of attitude, because it is important, especially to some of us older ones, that tradition, having family around you. But then you have somebody needs to be here. We've got to be with the other spouse's family that time. We've already planned to do this, or we're going to take a trip here. It even in the best of times, it can be overwhelming. Now, I think to keep that in check, be able to back off of it, tell people I understand, and not let it overwhelm you. But if it does, ask somebody to talk to you. That's some of the best healing thing in the world, is to talk to somebody that cares about you.
Again, bringing this back to our kids, because nationally the numbers are shocking on suicide generally.
Yes, sir.
With our children, it is particularly shocking. And here in the state of Utah, sometimes we lull ourselves into la-la land a little bit. Our numbers on teen suicide and suicide in general are shocking, and they are above the national average, not by a little bit, but by quite a bit. I mean, we're in a very dubious state of being among the highest in the entire country. For parents, as you look around your family, particularly as we move into this time of year, what should we as parents and grandparents and maybe even teachers, what should we be aware of?
Okay. And I want to first comment on what you said. You're right. Utah is one of the, you know, we deal with all 50 states, and it's one of the higher ones. When you look at the rankings from the causes of death for your ages 10 to 24, suicide is the number one leading cause of death in the state of Utah. For that age group. So it's something that's very, very intense. There was some good news that it leveled off, and I saw a report just a few days ago that this is the first time in several years it hadn't increased, but it only decreased, I think, 0.5%. So, but that's a good sign. But what can you do? You know, first of all, you know, make sure you have that lines of communication open up to your sons and daughters. You know, as you researched mine, I lost my son, Jason, to suicide 22 years ago. He was 16 years old. And as I look back and what we've learned since that, you know, we got to keep those lines open. Let our young people know that it's okay to talk to us, to share with us their fears sometimes, or if they're feeling, as we said, overwhelmed. But then sometimes that communication there, but to watch for those what we call signs that are out of character for how you know your son or daughter. You know, it can be that someone who's always wanting to go out shopping or always there to go out to see sports, all he wants, doesn't want to do that anymore. The grades are dropping. I don't mean from A's to F, but they might be from B's to C's and D's. They're not getting their assignments done. They've sort of lost interest in some of their favorite things that they have always enjoyed doing. Look for those telltale signs. Of course, depression, as we said, and that's the reason for the holiday notice we sent out. Depression, we think that's something only us adults get. You know, there's been two major studies done, and both of them came out that 1 out of 10 young people in the United States have been clinically depressed during the 12 months. So it is something, depression is something that is getting rampant. What scares me, Doug, is you talked about the rate of suicide. It's not getting better. You know, since 2007, we've had a 70% increase in youth suicide rates across the country. So it's something that we have to do more like you're doing here today. Let's talk about it, not scare people. Let's talk about it in a very informative way, get some facts, get some awareness out there, and then start working on prevention methods.
Clark, is there a website or somewhere that folks can go to get a little help and some guidelines on this?
Sure. Yeah, our website simply Jason Foundation, all one word, jasonfoundation.com. We have a lot of information on there. We have a lot of programs that are downloadable straight from the website. And don't be afraid. We have, since 1997, we never charge for any program or resource that we agree to provide. So there's not any cost to it. It might be a school. It could be a church that's looking for a program, especially an adult program. That would be a great place to start, helping the adults understand more about the dangers and warning signs and what they can do to help prevent it.
Clark, I so appreciate you joining us. And
thank you for the opportunity, Doug.
It's been a great conversation. I wish you the very, very best, and I hope that you and yours have a very happy upcoming and non-stressful holiday season.
You too, sir. Thank you so much for having us on, and I appreciate this opportunity to share it with your listeners.
It's a real pleasure. Clark Flatt with us, president of the Jason Foundation, and it's simply jasonfoundation.com to get more information. Opioid prevention, this kind of dovetails into this topic as well. I mean, we think of firearms, we think of opioids, we think of different things that, so sadly, people, when they are depressed, will utilize certain ways to accomplish the taking of their own lives. And what can we do? I mean, along with the addictions, the threats of suicide, and so on, what can we do? We're going to talk with Lauren Radcliffe, who is with the State Health Department Opioid Prevention Specialist. We'll chat with her about some very important issues coming up here at KSL. And never fear, your texts and your voicemails will not go unheard and unheeded. We will spend a good portion of our final half hour talking about all that and keeping an eye. As of yet, they haven't gaveled back into session in the impeachment hearings in Washington, D.C. Thank you for joining us today at KSL News Radio. I'm Doug Wright. We've got a lot to talk about today, including at the very end of the program here, which is not that far off now. Here in about 15, 20 minutes, we will go back into texts and voicemail mode, because we've had so many people, and boy, many of these comments have really been thoughtful, including the one that said, "Hey, Doug, if you want to read something interesting, and if the impeachment articles against President Johnson back," this is Andrew Johnson, "in the 1800s, if they were applicable to him, they certainly would be applicable to Donald Trump." And he referred me to one in particular, Article 10, and we'll share that with you. It's interesting to see what a difference time has made. But following up on some of our previous topics, I'm really pleased that Lauren Radcliffe could join us, opioid prevention specialist. And Lauren, welcome. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me today. Happy to be here.
I've mentioned this. I've seen this up close and personal. Nobody in my immediate circle of family, but boy, in my immediate circle of friends, I have seen it. I've seen opioid addiction. I had a friend who had a back injury. It was Percocet. Mm-hmm. And oh my goodness, it just about ruined his life. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, he was able to get a grasp. But boy, not before some pretty deep depths were hit. I'll put it that way. And one of my first questions to you off the air is, okay, how are we doing? I didn't get the best of news. How are we doing?
Well, the truth is, from 2017 to 2018, we have seen an increase in all opioid overdose deaths, and that's for prescription alone, illicit opioids, so heroin, and then combination of prescription and heroin. All of those three types, we've seen increases in opioid overdose deaths.
Increases.
Mm-hmm.
I think of all of the efforts that have happened at governmental level, private level. The media has talked about this like crazy. I was mentioning that when we had our first grandchild, as we went to visit mother and child and my son at the Women's Center. This happened to be at IMC.
Congratulations.
Thank you. This was about 2 months ago. I was somewhat impressed and honestly a little shocked that right down in the main waiting room, when you go in, I think it's building 7 there, and boy, there's all kinds of, you know, opioid awareness things right by the elevators everywhere. I recall the efforts that have been underway for the last several years with doctors and with IMC and certainly other hospital groups and healthcare groups to really cut back on the number of prescriptions that are first of all given. If the prescription is given, the smaller number of pills or whatever it is are there. The information about disposing it and getting it out of your house. And I thought maybe we'd have cheerier news.
Yeah, we're definitely covering prevention and support from all angles. All these different methods that you have just mentioned is just everybody trying to get a go at providing
right.
help.
Is this sometimes when new efforts and new fires are put under certain causes, it takes a little while to see the responses. Is that what is anticipated here, or are we just not hitting the right note? Is it just getting that much worse?
Like you just mentioned, it takes time for us to see outcomes, and all of the prevention work that we're doing now with Stop the Opidemic, we're hoping that we're going to see a difference in 3, 4, 5 years, but right now we're just essentially holding on and staying with what we're doing, hoping that in the future it's going to make a difference. You did mention something about prescription opioid rates. And we have noticed that we've seen a decrease since 2012 on number of opioids being prescribed. Mm-hmm. And it's not in the literature, but there is a theory that doctors have seen how much of a problem it's been and are starting to cut back,
right.
which is nice to see.
Boy, I've certainly seen it. I haven't had anything serious other than, you know, a little dental work. I had a nice, exciting root canal recently. Oh. And my dentist, you know, while he said, now only take these if you need them. Mm-hmm. Try Tylenol first.
Yes.
But I don't want to send you home without them, but we're only going to send you home with a few. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it was pretty blunt, you know. And fortunately, you know, either because of his skills or I'd like to take all the credit for just, you know, toughing it out.
Yes.
But I did just take a few Tylenol. I was fine.
Yeah.
I didn't utilize them, and now I need to dispose of them, I suppose. It's almost too bad they can't be recycled to somebody who needs them, but that's a no-no.
That's a no-no.
Yeah.
Sharing your prescription with others is definitely a no-no.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen it with my mother, too, and I've seen it with my wife. She's had a few medical things done, and the same thing. I mean, practically a sit-down chat warning. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to give you this, but only use it if you need it.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd like to think that that would start paying some dividends.
Yeah. The reason why I think doctors are just so precautious when they are prescribing is opioid dependency can start within a week.
Yeah.
So the innocent prescription that you're getting for your root canal, dentists, doctors, they just want to cover their bases. There are some things you can do when a doctor is prescribing opioids or when you're being prescribed. I'd like to share them.
Oh, that would be great.
So just some preventative measures. If you are being prescribed opioids, talk to your doctor about the risk of addiction. Like I just mentioned, dependency can happen within a week, less than a week. So it's really important to understand what you're getting yourself into. Like we just mentioned, ask for alternatives to opioids. Ibuprofen and Motrin are much more effective in some cases than opioids would be. And if you are prescribed opioids, like we just mentioned, use them only as directed. And
right.
It's really important to safely dispose of your leftover or expired medications in a Dropbox location.
Well, let's take a brief break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about the disposal. Because it's amazing, and I can remember even several years ago when there was such a focus on this, I went home and I looked in our medicine cabinet, and I was surprised. We had more there than I ever thought, and, you know, left over from whatever. And even if it's only a couple of pills in a bottle, you get 10 of those pills or 5 of those bottles or whatever, and you've got a lot of stuff. And then when you read the statistics of how many users aren't going to the drug dealer. They're going to your medicine cabinet. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll chat about that a little bit more. I so appreciate Lauren Radcliffe joining us here in studio at KSL. And we'll and by the way, if you have any questions, why don't you text them in, and we can pose them to the expert who is here in studio with us, opioid prevention specialist here at KSL.
The afternoon insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
In case you just tuned in, let me reintroduce you to Lauren Radcliffe with the Health Department here in the state of Utah. She is opioid prevention specialist. We talked in generalities, but let's talk some specifics. First of all, I left everybody with the what do we do? Because Dee and I found this to be the case. When we were talking about this years ago here on the radio, I went home, looked in the medicine cabinet. We had a lot of little weird leftover prescriptions, and some of them were. You could just Lortab, things like that. Mm-hmm. What do you do with them?
You should dispose of them safely. So if you go to useonlyasdirected.org, there is a locator there. You're able to find a Dropbox by using your zip code. You can put in your zip code. It will give you the Dropbox closest to you.
Right. There was a day when they said flush them down the toilet, but that's
no-no.
You know, they're saying now that in water supplies that there are traces mm-hmm. of this now because of people doing that.
I believe it.
Yeah. What about the numbers, the actual numbers that are out there from the health department?
Yeah. When we're looking at opioids and people that overdose, a really important number to acknowledge is that 80% of heroin users started with prescription opioids. So a lot of the people out there that really need our help, they started perhaps with prescription drugs, got it from their doctor or dentist, and maybe weren't warned in the way that we're warning people today. So that's a big thing to recognize and acknowledge. And another number that just sticks in my mind is 5 Utahns die every week from an opioid overdose. That's almost one every day. And that's one of the higher rates in the nation.
This is so sad because we were talking about the suicide rate a little earlier with our guest, Clark Flatt, president of the Jason Foundation. And, you know, we pride ourselves in Utah. What a great life elevated everything else, mm-hmm. which in so many ways it is. But boy, we have some dark underbellies on suicide numbers, on opioid addiction. Mm-hmm. And did we start with this opioid addiction? Because, gosh, if it's dispensed by a doctor and you go get it from somebody who's in a nice white smock in your friendly local store, mm-hmm. that it has to be okay. But you'd never dream of, you know, going into a shady looking alley and buying a little baggie of stuff. I mean, that's wrong. That's immoral.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the problem, that we've assumed that, hey, doctor prescribed it, got it from a legitimate pharmacy, this is okay?
I do believe that that's where it's starting. Yeah. And we're not being warned about how to safely take opioids, right. which is a big change in now that doctors are doing that is being effective. Doctors are warning their patients.
So many times when we're dealing with a tough, tough issue, there's a stigma associated with it where people are just afraid to basically step forward, mm-hmm. even in a confidentiality situation, whether it's with an ecclesiastical leader or their doctor mm-hmm. or, you know, some counselor. You're still it's kind of hard to out yourself.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest things we can do as a state, as our smaller communities, is speak up. If you are somebody that's suffering from anything, really, in this issue, we're talking about addiction. So if you're somebody that's in addiction themselves, speak up, talk to somebody,
yeah.
talk to your doctor, talk to a friend, talk to a family member. And if you're somebody that's on the outside, that's witnessing it happening, put out a hand, say, hey, I see that you're hurting. How can I help?
Right.
What can I do? Is there anything I can do? Or find a resource yourself. If you go to www.opidemic.org, that's OPIDEMIC.org, and look at the treatment page, we have several resources, options that you can utilize to help yourself or someone that you feel is suffering from opioid addiction.
I hear this all the time, where people will say, I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
It was happening in my own home. It was happening in my circle of friends. It was happening where I work, and I had no idea. What do you watch out for?
What do you watch out for? So I think if you're observing somebody that you think might be addicted to opioids, you're going to look for glazed eyes. They're going to be really tired, slow to respond. They're really going to retreat and kind of isolate themselves in a way. when we're looking at opioid overdose itself, so there's six things to look for when you're identifying an opioid overdose, and those are you're going to see small or pinpoint pupils. Okay. Fingertips and lips are going to be blue or purple. If you shake the person, they're not going to wake up. Their breathing is going to be really shallow. There's going to be a faint pulse, and they could be making a gurgling or choking noise. And these are things that would help you identify, hey, we have an opioid overdose, whether right. it's someone in your home, literally on your couch, or someone on the street.
There was quite a conversation, and I still see the billboards, and I always mispronounce it,
Naloxone.
Naloxone.
Yes.
I always mispronounce that, Naloxone. Is that the miracle drug?
It can reverse an overdose. So when an opioid overdose happens, receptors in the brain get blocked, and that stops breathing from happening. So literally, somebody can't breathe when they're having an opioid overdose. When you administer Naloxone or Narcan, this reverses the receptors in the brain. It lets it, they essentially like lift up so that oxygen can begin flowing again. So they, it, you can call it a miracle drug. It brings people back to life. It saves people.
Boy, interesting. I so appreciate your insights and the time you've spent with us here at KSL. And once again, would you give us the website that people can go to?
Yes. Opidemic.org/treatment. That's OPIDEMIC.org/treatment. Also, 211, dialing that on the phone, is a great resource. You're going to be able to talk to a real human on the other line, and they will get you help as well.
Lauren, this has been a great moment for us. Thank you for joining us. Hopefully, this will help a lot of people. This is such a big issue, and sadly, here in the state of Utah, we're outperforming in a very dubious way. So thank you.
Thanks for having me. There is always hope.
Thank you for that. Let's take a brief break. And when we come back, we're just going to spend the remainder of our time sharing some of the texts, some of the voicemails that we've got. And as one of our texters pointed me toward the Andrew Johnson impeachment and especially one article, I'll share that with you as well. Stay with us. Yeah, I always walk away from this show not only entertained and impressed, but also sometimes really enlightened. And sometimes I walk out really learning something I had no clue of before. I was aware of the impeachment of Andrew Johnson, but I wasn't really thoroughly up to speed. There were so many articles of impeachment against him. But one of our texters said, you really need to look at Article 11 and Article 10. And Article 11 basically points directly to the 18th day of August, 1866, at the City of Washington in the District of Columbia, by public speech, Andrew Johnson did declare and affirm in substance that the 39th Congress of the United States was not a Congress of the United States authorized by the Constitution to exercise legislative power under the same, but on the contrary, was a Congress of only part of the states, thereby denying and intending to deny that the legislation of said Congress was valid or obligatory. Now, Article 10, this is interesting. Article 10 is a little different, that basically the president was bad-mouthing the Congress. That's what it boils down to. Designing and intending to set aside the rightful authority and powers of Congress did attempt to bring disgrace into disgrace, ridicule, hatred, contempt, and reproach the Congress of the United States and the several branches thereof to impair and destroy the regard and respect of all the good people of the United States for the Congress and its legislative power thereof. Well, boy, it's a good thing we aren't applying that not only to President Trump, but others who are maybe in an impeachable situation. I am reminded of when the President of the United States called members of his own party who were criticizing him human scum. I wonder how the number Congress was it? The 30-something Congress would have reacted to that. Interesting. Thank you to our texter for drawing that to my attention. Yeah, the articles of impeachment were rather interesting back in the 1860s. But, boy, we have some interesting things of our own to deal with. This person, when I mentioned that from day one, Republicans were screaming for the impeachment, it never got to this stage, but the impeachment of President Obama and making all kinds of interesting claims, including one notable Republican, or we weren't quite sure if he was a Republican at the time or not, but one Donald J. Trump was just beating the band that this president was illegitimate, that he needed to be removed from office because he was not a citizen of the United States. Well, he was a citizen of the United States, perhaps, but he was not, as is required by the Constitution, born in the United States. And that was Donald J. Trump himself who beat the band on that one over and over and over. This person said, I wish someone would ask the question of why Giuliani, Rudy Giuliani, was even there. He shouldn't have been brokering any kind of diplomatic deal, questionable or not. This person said, don't panic about POTUS Trump. You only have to put up with him for another 1,900 days or so. Ooh, they're including the next term. This person said, thank you for your unbiased comments. Thank you. Let's see. Would fraudulent tax forms be an impeachable offense? I don't know. Would you have had to have done that while you were president? And how would you prove the fraud? I'm not quite sure. This person said, ooh, this is kind of brutal. Stewart equals hack. This person said, for Chris to compare Trump with Bush is horrific. To our knowledge, Bush did not withhold aid for his own benefit. I think I shared that just a little bit earlier. We do have some voicemails that I wanted to share with you as well. And this person compared this to a rather infamous trial of the past.
This is the OJ trial of our decade. It's just as ridiculous, just as meaningless, just as boring, and yet it has the majority of the American public enwrapped. How terribly sad, once again, for the state of the intellect of the average American.
Okay, let's take another one. This one refers to our 2nd District Congressman.
Congressman Chris Stewart is an absolute embarrassment. This is such a joke. Yeah, it sounds like you're describing what Donald Trump has done to every adversary as far as this supposed unfair smear, this unfair treatment. Sounds like you're describing what Trump and his allies did to Ambassador Yovanovitch. It is indefensible. I'm sickened by it.
Let's save one more. Let me share some more of the texts that have come in. This person said, about the hearings, I think the truth is in the middle somewhere. I feel bad for the people who are being questioned. They are stuck in the middle of this political fight. We should simply look for the truth. That is true. And you'd like to think that that is what our elected representatives would be doing, that they would be looking for the truth. But I think, sadly, in so many cases, they're not looking for the truth. They are looking for the ways to protect or throw their president under the bus. They're looking for ways to protect their parties, and I think that can be said of both sides here. They're looking for political opportunity. They're looking to grind their political axe. And remember, every single one of these individuals that we are seeing on this committee and every single one of the individuals who very well might be, I'd say the probability is quite high that they will be voting on impeachment, and most likely the majority, barring some real defections from the Democratic Party, they will vote for impeachment. Every single one of these individuals are up for re-election in 2020. Every single one in the House of Representatives. Now, when this is booted over to the Senate, and I believe it will be, one-third of our 100 senators will also be up for re-election, so you can never quite discount, even I think with individuals who are trying, you can never discount the political game that is being played. This person said, I am so appalled at Chris Stewart. He has turned into a Trump yes man. If he were in my district, I would be actively supporting his opponent, and yes, I am a Utah Republican. This person said, after listening to Chris Stewart, it's clear to me that he puts politics over principles. That we've been getting a ton of comments. And for those who sent us a question right at the end of our interview with our opioid expert, they always tend to come in. I looked at the timing just to think, how did I miss these? They came in just as she was walking out of the studio. So I apologize. I wasn't able to ask those questions on your behalf. This person said they could put Chris Stewart and Devin Nunes into a burlap sack and shake it up good. Well, now there you go. Have to be a big burlap sack, by the way. This person said, you know, it would be nice if our elected officials would actually get to work. I guess we the people are to blame, but I am tired of the lack of leadership that we're seeing in our federal House and our federal Senate. And then this person said, this is thanking me, saying that it's fun to hear me back on the air. Thank you, thank you. I appreciate that very much. Why haven't people investigate? Oh, this gets into the medicine and the opioid issue. And gosh, I wish that Lauren were back here with us and I could ask her on your behalf. I want to get into this one. This person again. Boy, a lot of the focus is on Chris Stewart, and I'm feeling guilty about that, honestly. But he is our representative back in Washington, D.C., the only one of our federal delegation and the only one of our four congressmen who happened to be, and they are all congressmen right now, the only one who happens to be on this committee. So we're not picking on Chris Stewart. He just happens to be the person that is in the forefront right now and one of the few on the committee and the only one on the committee from the state of Utah. So let's hear what this voicemail had to say about Chris Stewart.
I'm really disappointed in Representative Chris Stewart's words, his comments. I didn't really feel like he was questioning the witness as much as he was making political statements.
That's one of the big, big problems with this process, and I don't know how I would improve it. I think a lot of it just relies on people's sense of fairness and is their first duty to the country and the people of the United States of America, or is their first duty to their party leaders, their president, their speaker, their majority leader, their whatever it might be? Isn't the responsibility of all of our elected officials ultimately to you and to me and to this great country that they represent? And I read a great book once, because sometimes we get this idea that, well, you know, Chris Stewart represents the 2nd Congressional District of the state of Utah, or Senator Romney represents the great state of Utah. There's truth in that, but ultimately they are representatives of the United States government. Their first allegiance is to the welfare of the United States, the Constitution, and to you and to me. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow.